what they call me, what the name of this, the footprints are, and but they pointed them out to me. Chap pointed out to me, and they were where it come from, where it went. No one knew, but it certainly something like that had been in the park.
Mystery visitor.
Yeah. Well, you. Sorry, I think out in North Ilford there are some in some of the things there. So how? But I, you know, someone said, oh, it's probably come down the watercourse, you know, through Seven Kings Park and all that. But a lot of that's culverted, so it's underground. So there's no way it could have. So I've no idea how it got there, but certainly that was one of the things which was mentioned. Oh, going back to dogs in the park. When we first moved in, we had none of this thing about, you know, the dog wardens or anything like that. And people down the road, I think probably from around as well, used to let their dogs out in the daytime while they were at work. And there was one dog which we used to call Sheep. It was a big shaggy dog that used to live right up the end of South Park Road, and he'd come out of his house about 8 o'clock in the morning, trot down the road, and then you'd see other dogs joining him as he came down. So there's about six of them, half a dozen, sometimes more, and they'd play in the park all day. They'd go and get some water from either the park, you put some water out, they might drink in the lake, or they might go down to the where the cafe was and have something there, you know. They seemed just be around, everybody accepted them, they didn't seem to be any nuisance or anything like that. And then in the evening you'd see them trotting back up the road, you know, peeling off to their own houses and wait outside until they were let in. And that went on for quite a few years actually. So, but then of course you wouldn't have that anymore. No one would allow that sort of thing to happen.
Well, they'd be picked off and off to the pound.
Well, that's right, yes, yeah, yeah. But that certainly
was happening. Were they well behaved then?
Yes, there was no problem at all. Yeah, that was just where they went. You know, that was their house, that was their home. They used to play around there. They sometimes go do a bit of chasing around, that sort of thing. But no one seemed to really bother about them.
I love this idea of this sort of like, you know, friendly pack of dogs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sort of thing, yeah. You know. It was funny, you know, and you just accepted it. You know, it was, that's what happened. They trotted down there. Now, of course, you see the foxes, usually in the evenings. Yeah, and where you've got, I don't know how many there are in the park, because I know round here where we live, if the foxes aren't breeding in the thing, you see them there. You get more rats, because there are an awful lot of rats around. But once the foxes are in here, because we've had foxes in the garden, that sort of thing, the rats disappear. You know, you sometimes find a dead rat, but the rats are intelligent, so they know, you know, keep away from them, and they'll find somewhere else. Mm. But, you know, we've had foxes in the garden, youngsters. We used to have a cat, and she'd go out and play with the young foxes. And I remember one day, it was very hot day, I'd left the conservatory door open, and I was in the front room, and I smelled this funny smell. I came out here, and there was our cat curled up on one side of the conservatory. On the other side there was a dog fox, there, a young one, and he saw me and he just got up and walked out, you know. But I think it was probably one a cub from the previous year that she'd played with out in the garden, you know. I mean, it was a cub, so she
little
knew
old
it,
friend,
yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because when the cats and the foxes pass each other, they know they're there, but they turn their heads away, so their heads are pointing away from each other, and they just walk past, you know. So yeah, they know they're there, but as long as they don't acknowledge them, they don't have to do anything about it. So yeah, that's quite interesting. Yeah.
Oh, I love the idea of your cat having all these little foxy friends.
Yeah, that's
well.
Right. Yes, that yes. It's yeah. But a previous cat we had was friends with all the dogs. It was a big one. It came to live with us. We thought it was young, but in fact it was about 10 or 11. Lived to about 20 odd, and it was a big cat. And it used to go off at certain times, and it used to go off to where the dogs were, and it would go and push the dogs out of the way, and they'd eat up some of the dog food and come back. They'd been living wild. We found out later that their owners, who'd lived out further over on the other side there, they'd had two of them, and they'd grown up together, played around together. And then one of them, they both had cat flu. One had died and the other one hadn't. And then the owner, she had a new man came in who was allergic to them, so it had to live outside. And then they moved away and the cat stayed and went into our greenhouse in the winter. So he decided to come and live with us, which is what he did. And he was there for another 15 years, I suppose, something like that. But yes, he was interesting. And he used to come and sit in with the rabbits. We had a pair of rabbits, a pair of male rabbits. They were really fierce. But he used to know when he was in there because his whiskers would be chewed down. They'd sit on either side of him and jump on his whiskers. Yes. But, yeah, you don't see very many. There are some cats around, not a lot. Of course, there are no really... The dogs aren't allowed out on their own or anything like that anymore. So I think that's possibly one reason why there's more rats about, because the predators aren't there. I think there are foxes around, but not as much. And dogs are often on leads.
Cats tend to be indoor cats.
Yes, and I don't think that with... I think a lot of the area has now changed from being privately owned to being rented out. So, you know, more transitory.
Fewer
trap pets, yes. Yeah. The other interesting thing with the bats in the park, which I didn't know anything about until the bat walk started a few years ago. And we went on one of the bat walks. And there are all sorts of different ones there. You go in the evening when it's just getting dark. And you have the thing which translates the frequency down to a lower frequency, you can hear it. And then you just look and you see them. You know, so that's quite interesting. To know that they're there and you don't know anything about them is interesting. Of course, they put bat boxes up in the park, and the boathouse, now the top part of it's converted so that they can live in there as well. So that's an interesting... keeps down the...
Have the numbers of the bats risen?
I think they have, but I don't know whether there were any surveys of them before. You know, I think it's something new, so, you know, they knew they were there, but, you know, it's, you know, the numbers, it's difficult really to estimate, I think. So.
And of course, it's not really an animal that you see a lot because it's nocturnal, isn't it?
Yeah, so. And they're most of them are quite small pipistrelles. I mean, some are, I think they have got some larger ones, but I think it's mainly pipistrelles that are there. But it was very interesting to see those. I think that's all the mammals and things, the wildlife. Old plants and trees. I think I just mentioned about the colleague who told me about those. Where the nursery, the plant nursery was, that all became sort of just allowed to go to seed for a long time. But that was then became a formal garden, which is where the water comes in. You can now see that. So that's made quite a nice area. They've not really redone the large shrubs and things like that, which were there. A lot of them obviously died and a lot were knocked down. And we've had several different companies they've brought in, some with more knowledge than others. And my impression, talking to one of the people who used to work for them, is that sometimes they'd come in wanting mulch to go on a different job, that the private job they had somewhere else. So they'd come in, pick on a tree, cut it down, mulch it up, and off they'd go with it. And then they'd charge the council for the tree. But, you know, that's just what I was told by someone who'd worked for them. So, and I think that's a lot of that's been cleared up now. Anne's been having a go at all the people and actually liaised with them. I think it's much better organised now. I think a lot of it used to be on an ad hoc basis. They want something done, so they employ a company to do it. And they'd have to put it out to the cheapest tender, and, you know, who do you know you're going to get? So that's
the danger, isn't it?
Yes. But I mean, that's the impression that I've got, and other people in the park have got. That's what's happened.
Do you personally remember gardeners and park wardens in the parks, or did they kind of stop by the 70s?
I can remember. There were certainly gardeners using the nursery, the cold frames, and there were still things in there, and they stored stuff in there. Whether they did an awful lot, that was back in the 1970s. Whether they did an awful lot or not, I don't know. The park keeper... Certainly the park keeper's house, which is now the nursery for South Park's junior school, that was empty. It was empty for many, many years. And I was told that whether true or not, the park keepers wouldn't live there because there was so much going on in the park at nights and they just wouldn't be prepared to do it. Or whether, in fact, the council just decided that they didn't want to have the problem of people having residency in there, and then when they left... You know, having to move them out. I don't know, but certainly that wasn't used.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lady I interviewed, that's where she lived.
Mm. Oh, right, yes.
Her father was the head gardener.
Yeah, yes.
Of the park. Yeah, his name was May. I don't know if that's the name. I think he retired in the mid-70s. So
don't remember still it. Around. No, I don't remember it. Probably still around, but I don't remember the name. No. So, yeah, so that, you know, they, but I mean, they were park keepers, but yeah. Their whole... Now, I think some of... I think my impression was they were quite strict, but that was, again, 80s, it seemed to just... peter off, and you had some people in there, some people not. You know, sometimes there'd be somebody there and sometimes there wouldn't, so you don't really know. And then of course the whole nature of it has changed, so what's happened with park keepers, I don't know. I mean, well, I think we're better off now. We've got parks police, we've got a very good person who cares for the park now, who is really very, very efficient and really does keep it clean, cleans up, and she liaises with Anne about what's happening and that sort of thing. And then there are the, I can't think what the name of the company is, that come in and do all the cleaning up and, you know, sorting out the trees and all that sort of thing.
But they're directly employed by Redbridge Council
Yeah. Redbridge Council, yes. So that's all improved.
Do you think it's improved since they started doing that private contracting?
Yes, I think it's improved since... Everything seemed to be ad hoc back in the 1980s and 90s. It all seemed to be ad hoc, what was going on. And then it sort of got... I don't know, I think they got private contractors in that were doing something for some of the time, and then, you know, they just got paid for taking down trees. But which trees? You know, they sort of decided on for themselves, I think. I don't know. But certainly in the last 10 years, I suppose, it has improved a lot. And there's a lot, you know, it's looked after a lot better than it was. Yeah.
Fantastic.
The, one thing I was going to say about the amenities in the park.
Yes.
The cafe I mentioned, of course, that got burnt down.
Do you know anything about that? Do you know if it was an arson or was it...
No, it was originally reported as an arson, right. But it turns out when they did the proper inspection of it, it was wiring. Wiring went back a long way.
Yeah.
Whether it was the original wiring, I don't know.
The 1920s.
But, you know, yeah, and it caught fire because of that. So, you know, although there was a lot of rumours, it was faulty wiring, which was the cause of that. The rustic shelters and seats I've mentioned as well, they were quite nice. They had sort of wooden tiled roofs, and they look quite nice. But of course they got, you know, vandalised. And by that time the council wasn't spending the money on mending things. So once they got vandalised, they sort of, their answer was to take it down rather than to repair it. Which is a bit sad.
What kind of vandalism was it? Was it like just sort of kids carving
their
names?
I think some of it was, bits were broken off of it, and I think someone set fire to one of them, you know, inside there. And I think obviously there were vagrants in the living in the park, and so if they set fire to something, you know, they may build a fire and it got out of hand, and they were probably drinking a lot as well. Because I think there was problems up at the church on the high road, is it St Mary's, whatever the name of the big church on the high road is, which has got
Peter's
that
St Paul's,
is it, with the one with the big cemetery,
I don't know what that was,
and people living in those, and at one point they had a goat in there. They actually bought a goat to frighten off the people who were drinking the finos. You'd be in a cemetery and there'd be this horns coming out and the goat appearing, you know, and they'd have their hallucinations and disappear off. So I think so. Yes, they had for a short while, again, 1980s, I think it was 70s or 80s, there was a goat. It was there to eat up all the things, but I think it also kept down the others. And so I think they tended to move somewhere else. Well, South Park. A lot of the fencing around the park was a bit dodgy, so, you know, you'd often see a panel disappearing, whatever. They've improved that as well, that fencing off. Yeah.
They've got proper metal fence.
Or yes, yeah. I'm trying to think what it was like before, but it was ones where you could actually, if you really pulled on them, you could move out sections or little bits of it so people could get through.
Were they metal or were they...
Oh, they were metal, right, yes, okay. Yeah. But and they've used part of the original bits there to do it. Well, that reminds me, I don't know whether anyone's mentioned it, the pillar box on the corner of South Park Terrace, is it? The one down that end, anyway, of the road, and South Park Drive. that, if you look at it, you'll find there are shrapnel holes in the base. And although it's places away from the park, it seems that when the V weapon went off in the park, it blew that down. Holes went into it, but they reused the base. They've reset it in a slightly different angle and then put a new top on. So that's... And some of the people that are interested in pillar boxes and all that sort of thing come and photograph that.
It was quite a significant bomb damage. Was there a couple of houses went down?
Oh, yes.
Well,
I mean, there's a ton of explosive in a V1 or a V2. So, you know, think of that going off. And there was something up at this end of the park because our... roof, you can see it's partly moved forward slightly, and certainly the front of the house, the what were lathe and plaster ceilings are now plasterboard, and you could see up in the top where all the bits were. So obviously the roofs that came off from that as well. So there were two that went off in the park. So yeah, so a lot of damage, and you know, lots of repairs were done. There's one other thing. Let's go to the gunman in South Park. Right, that's on my last page there. We think it was 1980. We were woken up in the middle of the night by a helicopter and police. And Lorraine just remembered. They said, residents, stand away from your windows. Well, no one's awake, so there's this big megaphone. There is an armed man in the park. And it seems he'd fled through, I think, this end of the park. And gone through, and of course by the time they got armed police there, he was long gone. But you know, they were hovering over there all night and searching through, and it seems it was Big H, it was Harry somebody or other, who was a known gunman. But soon after that, they put a big barrier into where the water goes out of the lake. It's a sort of grill, and they said it was because the police had asked so that stop anyone getting through that way and going, because they would have gone down the culvert and then into the lake that goes, or the lake in Barking Park, but it goes along the culvert along all the way alongside the road going down South Park Drive. And so you can get out, you could get out that way. And that caused trouble ever since, because as rubbish gets washed down to there, it then builds up, formed a dam, and so the water get higher and higher. And then that would then mean it would wash back through, and there's a culvert that goes right round the side of the lake to carry the excess water through. And of course that got backed up as well, so it caused all sorts of problems. And in the end, I think it was Anne from the news group, finally managed to get the council to remove it, and so we got rid of all that. But they'd have to come and get there and move all the bits out, so you then get a big wave going right the way down through the rest of it.
Some kids at the other end waiting for their
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So that was one incident from then.
Because that was mentioned to me the other day, and they said that as soon as they heard the announcement, the first thing everyone did was went to their window.
That's right. Yes.
So they were complete, you know. Yeah. Whereas if they just kept quiet, like you say, everyone was in bed.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
They would have.
No. I mean, probably been. Yeah, you know, woken up by the noise of the helicopters, but it was interesting to see how that was done.
I like the idea of you both at different ends of the park, all looking at the windows.
There was the games pitches. They've changed because originally, in the winter, there was rugby and there were football pitches, and they were regularly used by clubs from around here, I think. Now, in the winter, there's only football. And we also used to have sometimes two, but at least certainly one cricket pitch, which was regularly used throughout the summer. And they used the big building, which is sort of parallel with South Park Roads here, South Park Crescent, is it? No, Terrace. On the side of the terrace, there's quite a big building.
It's a green building, isn't it?
That's right. They've painted it green. It's a brick-built one. With the park, he's got a little office in that as well. And that was used by them as the pavilion. And it used to be open. Well, I think now they've got shutters so that you could open part of it. But it used to be there. But, of course, vagrants used to sleep under there. So the thing they did was put shutters in to stop. And That was in the summer, but this last, I think last two seasons, they've not done it. I don't know what, why, but they've certainly not maintained the cricket, which is a bit sad because it's nice to see the cricket. You know, it used to be regularly used, and there used to be matches there, usually on a Sunday. Yeah.
I mean, I heard there was actually a cricket team club sort of based in the park.
There could well have been. I didn't know about it anyway, but certainly they were always playing cricket there, so it would suggest there probably was. Yeah. And the other one I can remember, not actually in the park, but round the park, there used to be a regular walking race round the park, and I think it was in August, if I remember rightly, sometime around there, or it may have been June, July time. Anyway, the roads would be closed off around, and they would walk round the park, and that went on up until about 8 or 9 years ago, which always used to be interesting. The kids, when they were little, used to stand out there and watch, you know, and everybody would watch, but that seems to have stopped. And I don't know what club that was, but there certainly was.
Time to reinstate it, maybe.
Well, yes.
We'll speak to the
South. Well, they still have the ones in, they now have organised ones in the park.
They have, like, you know, park run, don't they?
Yeah, they have all sorts of things going on now, yes, yeah. Gets people involved, but I don't think they're sort of built around a club, which they would have been originally, so I don't know. Let me see what else there was. Cafe we've talked about, the rustic shutters, plants and trees,
the children's playground.
Yes, the children's playground. Originally it was just one. That was the one on South Park Terrace, that side of it. And it had quite a nice big slide, and it had a climbing frame which was made of what looked like scaffolding poles. It was all on concrete, you know, so if you fell, you hurt yourself, but kids soon learn not to fall off, you know. And I think there was a roundabout, and certainly swings, both little swings and for the toddlers and the other types of swings. Big notice, no one over the age of 14 to use them. And that was, you know, that was about all. When our children were small, that was about all there was. And then parts of that was taken away, that, like, the climbing frame was taken away because it was thought to be too dangerous. And then they gradually altered it. And now, of course, they've improved it a lot. And there's the worry about particularly dogs, and if they fouled it, because they could carry worms which can get in the eye, you know, that sort of thing. So they then fenced off that one. And then they built the small one by the pavilion for the little children, which is, you know, very nicely maintained and is really nice. But beside that, they had the nets for the cricket. And a lot of the time there weren't nets there, so people were using the cricket nets. Balls were flying everywhere with the kids in the thing there. So that was taken down. And whether it was taken down by the council, or whether one suspected it was taken down by a scaffolder who wanted the poles, but they disappeared. And then it was moved to where the adult gym is now. And that, for a season, was where the cricket nets were. And then they disappeared. And that was left open again. And then later they put the adult gym in, and the latest one was the big play area down near the boating, you know, that area, which has got all the wooden, the flying fox and all those things that the kids love playing on, and that's been a nice asset that's been put in the park. So the park is used a lot more than it previously was, because all that's there, you know, it's really nice to see. So, yeah.
And what about sort of special events, if you like, that happen in the park? Can you remember anything?
The Millennium, I think, was probably the first one I remember, or probably maybe in the first one they had there. And then they've had the fair coming. A lot of people were worried about it, but I think, you know, the way it's organised now, it's only, I think it closes at 8 o'clock, and it's all self-contained, and there's very little. The one which I think worried us most and started people off was the Millennium one, because it was all over. It seemed to be all over and took over a lot of the park, but I've had no objection to the ones which they've had there. I think they had one noisy event, which was noisy, and I think people have complained about that. I think they've stopped having those because there was, I think, an application to have a number of those, but I think they were stopped. But the fair has been quite nice. You know, it's been well organised. It's been fenced in properly. Where they were on with large machinery on grass, they put boards down so that, you know, when after they've moved, whereas originally with that Millennium one, it took ages for the grass and everything else to grow back. Within a few weeks, the grass is all back to normal again. So they do it really well. So I've got no objections to those at all.
How big is that fair? Do you remember when it started?
3 or 4 years ago, I think, was the first one. Okay. But I think there may have been odd things between then and the Millennium. Mm. But that one seems to be very well done, you know. And it's nowhere near as big as the one that they have in Barking Park, but it's sort of an offshoot of it. And I was talking to somebody over there from there, and he was saying that, well, the fair people sort of have big fairs, like the one in Barking Park in September, October time, where they all sort of congregate to, and then they have smaller ones. You know, those break up into smaller groups and go into smaller areas.
Almost like individual families.
Yes, sort of, well, it probably is, yes. But they've, you know, they sort of got it all sussed out for the different places. And they know that they can't stay for very long in any one place because, you know, A, they won't have a big enough market for it, and B, it causes problems because people will complain, whatever they do. So, but, it seems to work out very well. And they've done it at this end of the park, away from the lake. So where, if there are ducks and that sort of thing nesting, they're not going to have that sort of disturbance which we had when the Millennium ones, where crowds were on this side of the lake and then all the fireworks on the other side of the lake. And they just went on and they were really noisy. And, you know, you could see the birds, as soon as they started, all the birds flew off, you know. And it was at the evening time when they should be settling on their nests. And, of course, you know, they were off then. So. But we've not had anything since then. I think people have learnt not to have the fireworks and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And you mentioned there was an event that was quite noisy. What kind of event was that?
I'm trying to think now. I think there was a sort of, I don't know, not really a rock concert, but a lot of concert things, you know, where people were holding an event which was quite noisy. But that would have been about 10 years ago, I suppose. And there was a lot of complaints about that. But, you know, what they've got at the moment, people seem to like. And it's mainly aimed at, I think they've got more children stuff there than adult stuff. So, you know, it's sort of aimed at that range. But I don't think they're getting very many people coming in. They never seem to be very busy, unfortunately. So, and I think the council really need to look at ways in which they can raise funds, you know, because if they don't raise funds, you know, with cutbacks, the government's wanting them to save another, I don't know how many millions this next year. Without that, then all sort of things like the parks and that sort of thing are going to get less and less funding, and so they're going to be run down again like they were in the 1980s.
Lose all the benches again.
Well, yes.
Let's hope not.
Yes, you could do, yes, yes. If someone sees them and thinks, oh, we'll have those. You never know. Yeah, so.
When were your children born?
Mid-70s. Yeah, so, about 77, something like that. You know, that sort of time.
And do you have memories of taking them over to the
park? Oh, yes, we used to go over to the park, yes. Regularly, and they would go on their bikes. They learnt to cycle on their bikes over there. I remember Sarah, about three or four, with the first bike, and wanted the stabilisers taken off, and Lorraine took her over there, and she says, I can do it, and she just pedalled off, and she went off round a sort of big circle, and she managed it, you know, before she came off. So, yes, I mean, there's all sorts of things like that. But, I mean, they would have loved the climbing areas that are all the new ones, but of course their grandchildren now come and they use those, so that's good. Yeah, they really enjoy that. Yeah.
It must be quite an emotional experience for you, seeing maybe where your children played and suddenly now you see your grandchildren.
No, yes, there. Yeah, yeah.
It must be quite nice to see that
generation.
Yes,
and it's nice to see them all taking advantage of what's there. which is good. Yeah, and you see, you know, a lot of children now, which you wouldn't do. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say this, but used to back in the 1990s, we used to think, you know, you see more children on a school day in the park than you would do when it was school holidays, because they'd be bunking off schools, the different schools around here. And you'd see quite a lot of them in the park, you know, but now they tend to go to school on school days and they come into the park in the holidays or on the weekend. But it used to be, you know, you sometimes find it park would be almost empty when it was, you know, the holidays, but quite full when it wasn't, which was quite funny, really.
I can kind of imagine their logic, thinking, well, we've been in the park all week, we need to go there at the weekend.
Yeah, well, if they bunked off school, you know, they know that... perhaps they know that the teacher they've got next won't check on them, so they dash off for an hour and then dash back and get back in and do it. I don't know. But yeah.
It's very different in schools now. They come down quite hard on truancy now.
Oh, yes,
now,
they do.
They?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you must know that as a teacher yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
Did you ever see any of your kids in South Park when they should have been at Barking?
No. Because I was ill, and so when I was over there after I'd retired, a couple of times I saw South Park for there, so I had a little gentle word, and they would toddle off back. Yeah. But no, it's a bit far from Barking Abbey, really, to come down, because Barking Park's close to it, and also the other way there's a further park, I can't think what it's called,
Oxford
on the other
park.
Side.
No, not Oxford Park.
There's Loxford, but it's Barking Park itself. Because Barking Abbey School is on the corner where the pub is, but it's also over, further over, there's the main site, and then if you go a little bit further over, there's another park, so you can get through the houses.
Is that further down Longbridge Road, though?
Yes, that's along Longbridge Road, and sort of to the south of Longbridge Road, there's another park there. I can't think what it's called now.
I would have just thought that Barking Park might have been a bit too close for home for some of the Barking Abbey kids to bunk off in.
Well, yes, I remember when I first started there, because they used to have the swimming pool there, the outdoor swimming pool. And when I first started there, it was the last year it was a grammar school. And in the last two or three weeks of the summer term, when you were marking exams and things like that, if the kids brought their swimming things with them, they could go off to the park. And it seemed the year before, I think there'd been 150 of our kids in the park one day, and one of them fell and broke his leg, and there was no member of staff there. So I think that's what happened. So the next year, members of staff were asked. Being the youngest teacher there, I spent many an afternoon in the summer, in the week or so before the end of term, when I'd go over there, and I'd be the one designated member of staff to look after the children.
Not a bad life, is it?
No. I mean, it was interesting there because, you know, it was a grammar school, and the children, well, I mean, they could teach themselves, basically, with the way that the O-levels and things went at that time. And we used to have these very brightly coloured uniforms for the prefects. So it was like Butlins, you know, the red coats at Butlins used to be. Yes, it was very interesting teaching there. Very different to what I expected. And then of course, we went comprehensive and then things changed, you know. But yes, it was. I'd enjoyed that first year. Because, you know, the kids were... Well, I think, you know, they wanted to learn, and you know, they'd sort of been got into a routine, so you just followed it on. But I think some of the staff found it a bit difficult when we went comprehensive, because they'd not taught that level before. But having, you know, sort of just qualified and gone and seen, you know, when I was teaching practice, that sort of thing, and been in comprehensive school then and seen all the different levels, I found it very... You know, it was fun to teach them, because you go from 11-year-old who might well be sort of special needs almost to 17, 18, 19-year-old who was doing work for Oxford or Cambridge, you know, entrance, you know, so you go between the two. So the whole range there, it's really fun.
It's made your life, you know, your job much more exciting.
Oh, it was, and it's really interesting, you know, to see all these. And you see them develop, you know, from what they were originally, and you'd see some of them who'd struggled when they'd first come in would suddenly blossom, and you know, you'd find they'd go on to university, and you'd meet them a few years later, and you'd find, you know, they were actually a professor of something or other, you know. It was interesting.
Yes. I feel quite proud.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's not just proud, but it's just to see that those children actually did. Because at the time, Barking and Dagenham had problems with, well, A, with recruiting staff. I mean, back in the 1970s when I started there, I think when there was only about 1,500 staff in all the schools, 1,600, something like that. And I think it was between 400 and 500 of those would be new teachers each year because the others had moved on. So you had a very large number of newly qualified teachers in the schools. And you had some who were, you know, who'd stayed quite a long while and were, you know, knew their job really well, but there were new teachers coming in. So it was very difficult, very hard work. And also, it meant most schools couldn't actually fill their quota of teachers. So, you know, any teacher you could get, if they came up the path and they could get there and look reasonable, you'd employ them, you know. We had some quite interesting characters because of that. Right. So, you know, that was, it made for a very young workforce. And lots of them had lots of good ideas and things like that. But of course, it made it difficult because they were changing all the time. So you didn't necessarily have the stability. Mm. And particularly in Dagenham, but also partly in Barking, a lot of the parents had not stayed on at school to do anything. There were a lot of, even at that time, a lot of factories. I mean, Ford's, for instance, had thousands upon thousands of people employed. But there were a lot of other small factories. You went down along the riverbank and there were all these factories around, you know, small ones doing all sorts of different things. And so the employment was there. And so trying to get the children to go on to university. I think Barking Abbey probably had the biggest number. And gradually working it up over those years was difficult.
I suppose it was quite a different time. People wouldn't necessarily be expected to have gone to university.
Well, I mean, when I went to university, I think it was between 6 and 10% only would go for A-levels. And out of those, probably about 5 or 6% actually went on to university. You know, it just wasn't expected. You know, I suppose my brother and I were lucky because my mother never got the opportunity because she'd won the place at grammar school. And so she was determined that her boys would go to university, you know, and do what she hadn't.
Well, good, good for
really
her.
Nice, yeah.
Good for her.
Really
because,
good.
I mean, I do hear that story quite a bit. You know, that child missed out on an opportunity for education. They're much more keen to push their children into it, don't they?
So, yeah.
No, I think that's a
And
you've done all right out of it, haven't you?
Yeah. I've had a good life. Yes, very good. Yeah, because a lot of people that I spoke to sort of, when I was sort of at school, but in the holidays I'd get jobs sort of in factories and things like that, and you'd find people there who were very intelligent, doing jobs which, you know, now you wouldn't, you know, they were reasonable jobs, but they were very intelligent people now for doing those sort of jobs, so you wouldn't expect them to do that. And then a few years later you'd hear people complain, well, the applicants aren't very good, you know, the schools are poor because these people can't do that. But the reason was that they were different children. You know, the children there would have just gone onto an assembly line, you know, and there would be jobs like that, which they would have done. But of course, those now being moved up to doing jobs which required other things, because a lot of the assembly lines had gone, so you needed people. And so people were complaining, you know, they weren't being, well, you know, they were different people, you know.
Types,
that was, so.
And obviously lots of things like apprenticeships and skilled manual
workers.
And things like that. So.
Yes, and I mean, the sort of jobs people used to go for are just not there. So, I mean, it's like engineering. There are engineering jobs abound, but there aren't people qualified anymore to do them. I belong to, what's it called, the Society for Model and Experimental Engineers, going for about 110 years, something like that. And we've got a big place down in South London at Loughborough Junction. And we've been looking at this, the way in which the things have changed over the years. And the problem is that engineering basically has gone out of the things. I'm not just talking about sort of doing the hands-on engineering, but a lot of the work that used to go on in schools isn't in the national curriculum anymore. And now they're trying to put it all back in again. We had a talk the other day by a lecturer who was having a lot of difficulty in recruiting people because of it. And then when you look at the computing side of it, the whole of the Raspberry Pi thing, which has come out, you know, with a little tiny computer, now sold more computers in this country than any other computer has ever been sold in the last 2 or 3 years. I think it's 5 millionth. Computer, a little Raspberry Pi has been sold, and that all came out of Cambridge University. A chap called Eben, I think he is, who they weren't able to recruit people to do software engineering. People wanted to do it, but they'd not done any software writing at all. Whereas when my son went to university to do software engineering back in the 1990s, because he'd gone all through the BBC B area and all that, and he'd done programming at home, you know, it was all within him, you know. But now, of course, people don't do that. And so this has all sort of come through to do that.
It's almost too easy to go on the computer and find the program already
there. Well, that's
for
right,
you.
It's already there for you. Yeah. And if you want to try and write a computer program on a Microsoft computer, you know, from scratch, it's very difficult, you know, because there's so many barriers in the way. Whereas the BBC micros and things like that were around at that time, the Amstrads, the ones like that, you actually went right down to the basics, you know, and to write your program. But now, you know, if you write a program in Windows, but you buy a program which allows you to put in what you want to do, and that will then write your program for you. You don't necessarily have to understand it. So the government has recently put in a complete new bit for the national curriculum, which includes all that stuff.
Yes, I've seen that recently. But programming for primary school children.
Well, that's right, yes. Yeah. But then who's going to teach it? Because the teachers haven't gone through that. All that part of it.
Yeah.
So it's all right them saying it, but what are they, you know, they need first of all to teach, give the teachers time and pay people to actually teach them. But what they're doing is just putting it out to private companies to teach them. So the money will go from the public purse into the private companies. And will they actually teach well? You know, we'll see, but it's very, very difficult. Whereas I was lucky, I went through the stage where did very much computing before that, and you just went in and you worked it out for yourself, and you taught it. And
I bet you get a lot of phone calls from your friends, don't you?
Try not to, but I've kept away from I have to use Microsoft stuff, but I've still continued to use Acorn Material Risk OS, which was developed by them onto ARM process, because they were original. ARM used to mean Acorn Risk Machine. So it was Acorn that invented these chips, which are now in absolutely everything. There are many more of them than there are people on this planet, you know. And everything from a car to a washing machine to a spin dryer will have an ARM chip in it controlling it, you know. And all of them have got the same type of programming that was they'd invented back in the 1980s. Still goes on in it, and so that you know, it's a big push at the moment to get it back into the mainstream, so a lot of interest in it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's to do with South Park.
This is the problem with me interviewing people. I just tend to go off track a little bit. Is there anything about South Park? I mean, we've covered an awful lot, I think, but is there anything else that you'd like to
think.
I mean, you mentioned your father fell in the lake. Have you ever fallen in the lake?
No, I didn't. Not you. The lady from up the road, one of the people who were living down that way had a dog we used to call Piglet, who was a rather stupid dog. And one day he decided he'd jump in the lake. Well, of course, he couldn't swim. He didn't know what it was. He was just floundering there. And the lady down there she didn't feel capable of jumping in the lake to do it. But this other lady came dashing across. It was almost the same age. And she just jumped into the lake and pulled out Piglet and took it out.
Piglet lived to fight another day.
Yes. I don't know how much longer, but I don't know what its real name was, but we used to call it Piglet because it was quite fat and round, you know, a little thing waddled along and looked like a little piglet, but wasn't.
I'm surprised it didn't float in the lake.
Well, I don't know what it was doing, but it seems she went in there. But no, I haven't. No, I've been lucky. Not
there's still time. There's
still yes, there is still time. Yes. But, apart from that, I can't think of anything else I've missed.
We've done quite well, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we've got through. Geese.
I mean, in terms of, I mean, obviously, eventually there's going to be an exhibition and we're going to do some school workshops.
Yeah.
Is there anything in particular you would like, I don't know, young people or just generally people in the future to know about the park that you would hope that they would get to experience for themselves? Any sort of shining feature that is just for you?
Well, I think it's just its accessibility, really. And it's got so many different things in just quite a small area. So you can see a lot of wildlife in there. You can just stand there and look at the lake. And if you do it for long enough, you'll see all sorts of different things appearing from in the lake. I think that's mainly it, you know. And there's, you know, even the rats are interesting because you can stand and watch them and you'll see them, you know, sort of doing their different things. And I know people don't like rats, but, you know, they're another thing. And they're intelligent and
they're part of the ecosystem.
Yes, yeah. So. Yes, I did hear a story, whether it's apocryphal or not, but it wasn't here, it was in South London, a chap calling out the RSPCA about a white, what was it now, a white smooth-tailed squirrel that he'd been feeding in his local park. So they were intrigued by this because they, you know, didn't know about smooth-tailed squirrels, whites. They came out there and took one look at it and said, well, that's a rat. It's a white rat. Which,
He'd been feeding this rat.
And obviously, you know, usually white rats have been tamed before, so that's probably why it's coming up.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's quite rare that you see a white rat naturally, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's probably one that's escaped and that's...
Probably why it's quite friendly.
Yeah.
And they do sit on their hind legs when they're munching, don't they?
Oh, yes.
So maybe I can see where he was coming from. But.
And if you see a squirrel where its tail has got wet, so it's just like a smooth thing, it just looks like a rat anyway, doesn't it?
Well, they're all rodents, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, yes. Yeah. Although supposedly they don't eat meat, but one doesn't know whether... Squirrels do eat meat. They probably do.
I should imagine these days there's a lot of squirrels. I've seen them eat chicken in the park. Yes. People throw their bones and things on the floor.
Yeah, I'm
and,
sure they would do.
You know, I've seen them having a go.
Yeah.
So.
They're supposed to be.
Yeah, that's what they're there for. Clean up the mess, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Yes, it's like they've been putting up around the notices around the park about, I think it was, dog mess, wasn't it? And there are no poo fairies. So I felt like changing that and saying, yes, there are. It's us. It's the flies. We're the poo fairies. We go and clear it up.
You know? Unfortunately, they don't move quite quick enough, do they, these flies?
But I mean, that's basically what they do. Is clear. Mind you, they might well get it onto your food and everything else, but they're the poo fairies.
I just imagine the poo fairies these days are probably poor members of the South Park users group going around picking it up, isn't it?
Well, that's why they put the notices up, which is quite reasonable to do. But I mean, the people have been a lot better because originally, of course, the parks could get quite messy with dog poo. People wouldn't, but then in the 1980s into the 90s, gradually people became educated and do pick it up. Yeah. I mean, some people don't, but the majority of people carry bags with them, and there are the different bins around, so that's another thing which has improved a lot in the park.
And I suppose a lot of people, if you see a park and it looks clean and tidy, you're more inclined to keep it.
Yes, that's right.
Clean and tidy. Yes. You don't want to be that person who's obvious mess.
No, that's right. So. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things like on Sundays for a long time there were no toilets open in the park. They've now got funding to be able to open in the park, so you get less human mess in the park, which we did before. But you know, it's things like that which, you know, when the funding people look at it and think, oh well, we can do it fine, we can't do it the whole week, so we won't do it on a Sunday, but then of course Sunday might well be the day when more people are in there and need it, you know. So it's a problem. But I mean, the toilets were closed for a long time, supposedly because of vandalism, and you would have thought that was something that ought to have been sorted out very quickly, because I know that there are groups of old people that have been brought, you know, that get visited the park and then stopped because there were no toilets for them. you know, because the group came from one of the homes around and used to go, I think it was a Tuesday or Wednesday, and they'd have a little walk around, they'd sit on the benches and they'd have a chat, and the help, you know, the helpers would be with them. But as soon as there were no toilets, of course, they couldn't come.
And no benches as well at one point.
Well, no benches at one point, so, yes. Yeah. But that's all improved, yeah. So that's good.
No, it's fantastic.
Mm. Yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, right. Unless there's anything else you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. No, I think...
Thank you very, very much. That's fine, yes. I really enjoyed it. Good. I'll just